You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Welcome.
And
friends.
It's me, Brian. Tonight's episode, episode 4, Joining the Gang, I believe.
Yes.
Boy, Joe, we've actually spoilers. Remembered it this time. So, yes, JoJo's, Joining the Gang. This is the first episode where I really felt it was back to what I was expecting from a JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Oh, like he's got a weird thing, now how can I use my weird thing to fuck with his weird thing?
Exactly, and also working together with somebody to defeat that weird thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, how does your weird thing work? How can I use that?
I think Koichi being involved also made a nice, like, passing the torch moment from...
It only makes it more clear with his call to Jotaro as well, that that's what he feels this is. Except for the thing after that, the little coda after that. Yeah. But, I mean, like, that's definitely what they're going for.
Sure. It is, yeah. I believe they also added stuff in episode 1 to make Giordo seem nicer than he is in the comic.
You can see, again, it's been a lot since I kind of read this, but kind of later on he seems, it's a little bit if it's too nice, but he seems a little kind of too bland almost, from what we kind of see here. And it's a guy who's like, you know, he's a bit of a wise guy, obviously, but he's got a heart of gold, but he's
got a mean streak.
Like later on, he's always kind of, oh, he's too good and kind of too honest, so he's a bit more like Jonathan, weirdly.
I guess he's directly descended from Jonathan, that kind of thing. Yeah, but
That could be as well that now we get the rest of the members of Bruno's crew. It's popping around them, and they have comparatively, also similarly interesting kind of backstories and personalities of their own, so maybe they are just more fun to read and watch.
Also, it was still being published in Shonen Jump at this point, wasn't it? So there's always a chance that they're responding.
Oh, there was some reworking later on.
Yeah, responding to reader feedback.
Yeah, it's like, he seems like a bad guy. Shouldn't he be like a good guy? It's like, fucking, did you see, like, Joseph Joestar? Come on.
but still at the end of this episode.
They are of a pure and noble lineage. And they always stay with one woman. Just one woman. My fucking hole.
But I don't think Joseph would ever kill someone in the way Giordo kills someone in this episode.
No one would ever, because that's impossible for anybody except for him to do.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, but.
But for like. For
more so, he'd do something stupid.
Yes, he would be there to see it happen. He wouldn't be like, here's a thing I set up, now I'm going to leave it a few hours a day, maybe, or however long it is.
Like, I know they were mostly on the side of the good guys, bizarrely, in part 2, but did Joseph kill, like, one goddamn Nazi? I don't think so.
That's true, yes.
Yeah.
There was, like, much more.
And if you're going to kill, like, even that fucking cactus guy, he didn't even kill that guy, I don't think. He just covered him in cactus needles.
This guy. Oh, that fella. Yeah.
Yeah, I've forgotten his name. He was a band. anyway, sorry.
Yeah, so anyway, the bulk of this episode, though, is first Giordo, then Koichi battling what they call Black Sabbath? Shadow Sabbath?
Shadow Sabbath.
That's it.
I didn't even fucking remember. I just remembered, like, them. Yeah, whatever.
And we get it clarified that it attacks anyone who saw the thing being relit, not just the person who relit the lighter.
Like, have we, like, is Koichi entirely versed in stands now? He understands, it's like, let me just look up my fucking classification guide.
Probably. He was like one of the guys, before sheer heart attack, were there any other, like, long distance remote stands? Try and think of them, you know.
I guess he's dealt with the most remote control, long distance programmed fucking stands than anyone.
The Empress was kind of like that.
Was that?
That was long distance, not so remote, kind of remote.
Yeah.
I think
yeah, that's a direct control, yeah.
And this Black Cyber, it has like no a primary directive. It just follows that.
Yeah, no, I guess he would be the foremost expert on remote control long distance stands.
Yeah. There's going to be a few of those actually, because they thought that's an interesting idea. There's a very highly advanced one that's made with a computer coming on down the middle of the story.
Oh, dear. Okay.
And they realize it can reach them through any shadow. And also, when it's within the shadows, it's...
It's crazy strong. Yeah.
Super, super fast. So even when he uses his standard...
Gold experience
on it.
To increase its awareness, I guess?
Yeah, also... Just to overload the senses.
Yeah.
But also, I guess if it's automatic, then that's also not really having that much of an effect, because...
Yeah, it's like fucking, I don't know, some D&D thing where it's a psychic attack against an automaton. It doesn't count, that kind of thing. Yeah, it's some weird ruling like that, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, because what they say the most Polpo would have felt would his hand being slightly sore. When
he was using his full weight on it, it's like his hand would have felt maybe a little heavier than usual. Yeah.
Nothing that he would actually realize it was happening to the stand, though.
Like, oh, I feel pretty tired today, I guess. If he notices it at all, because, yeah, the remote control doesn't have... You don't have the same one-to-one, you break the stand's leg, you break the person's leg, that kind of thing.
Initially, Kirichi thinks that Giorno is the one who killed the old man.
So, I saw you talking to that old man, and now he's fucking dead. What did you do?
And, yeah. Giorno's trying to explain, but then Black Sabbath tries to strike Kirichi, and Gold Experience blocks the blow. And then Kirishi's on board, and he's like, hang on, an arrow? Because that's the thing he's most surprised about in all this, is that there's...
I thought we took care of that fucking end of it.
You mean there was more?
They've got a whole quiver of things.
So they trap it, it looks like it's going to break Giorno's legs as they're using Kirishi's stand... And
to hold its hands down, even though it has a grip of Gold Experience's leg, so therefore Giorno's leg.
Yes, but Giorno's like, no, this is exactly. I was waiting for somebody with this power to come along.
And it doesn't really make sense until he explains later that cracked the pavement enough for him to get at the roots of a tree that was at a distance away.
And you can accept
outside of his range. Like I think Koichi says, like, but that's outside of 6 feet. Or whatever the fuck range is of those kind of stands.
His roots worked, and so therefore he could accelerate the lifespan of the tree.
Which the thing was hiding in the tree shadows.
Yes,
so, yeah,
because he previously tried this by turning a railing into morning glories.
So they'd flop out of the way? Yeah,
it wasn't enough light to take care of it.
It managed to get away pretty quick. I did like the kind of hopping between the shadows and him looking at it. It's like, oh, if we trap it like in that Vespa's shadow, then we can move it out of here or something like that.
Yeah.
Also, and it's moving between the crow's shadows, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's just like, it was just so quick that the birds flying overhead. Even just that small little shadow would cast is enough for it to occupy him, and then just nab him again.
I feel like it's one of those, like... Those JoJo's powers, like a game you'd play when you were a kid, where it's like, don't stay out of the shadows and everything. And as the sun is setting, it's like the layout of the ground is setting, is changing.
Floor is lava.
Yeah. But with the changing of the shadows as the sun's going down, that kind of thing. It's a pretty fun fucking problem to solve. Magician's trick to figure out.
And then they punch it. Then he punches it into the sky, so it doesn't have a chance.
No shadows in the sky. Yeah.
Now for part two of my strategy. Muda.
But then Koichi says, that didn't hurt Polvo at all. He probably doesn't even know it's happened. So yeah, he goes back, brings the lighter in. Polvo gives him this speech about...
Don't fuck with me kind of thing as a threat, but also congratulations, you passed.
Even God would forgive murder if it was due to an insult, I believe.
You can break the law, but you can't not mind your manners.
Yes.
you can't lie or something like that, was the way it was. And it, like, even in his little monologue, he kind of goes, I don't give a fuck if he did get stabbed, and then he has stand powers, or if he managed to hit the lighter, it's like, whatever, I don't care. Yeah. I'm in prison, it's fine.
Gives him his badge, me for the meat, right? And then we see Gold Experience appear within the cell.
Mm.
And Giorno leaves, Kirishi wants to make a phone call, which Giorno's like, no. This was before, actually, the phone call was before they went to the prison. He was like, yeah.
Oh, because it was a second phone call to Jotaro after the prison, yeah.
He was like, no, don't make that call, because this gang's everywhere, they might overhear my...
I can't have them knowing that I'm... Yeah, that I snuck into the gang or anything like that. Yeah.
So then later he rings Jotaro but says, I feel he's a good guy and I'll explain more when I see you face to face. I can't do it over the phone.
Yeah, because the reason why he was so mad and upset and everything is because, like, an innocent old man got fucking killed.
Yeah.
And he saw the same look as he's seen in three generations of the Joestar line at this stage. Yeah,
that's Joestar, this genetic charisma that can make anybody love them just by spending a few moments in their... in the presence.
And the sense of justice and that kind of thing. But yeah, the kind of the twist on it, obviously.
And then Giorno meets up with Bruno, looks at his light, we've got the badge, come and meet the gang, and then meanwhile, Polpo's sees, like, he thought, didn't I close that fridge? And then looks inside and goes, I get so exhausted when I'm eating or something, and he's a
eating. Yeah.
He loses track of things when he's eating. He said it earlier as well. It was just like, where the fuck was
he's
I?
Like, he needs to recharge his energy from eating, from the amount of energy he spent eating by eating some more.
Yeah.
Can't talk now, eating.
He grabs a banana, and then it slowly turns into a gun, and he shoots himself in the head. As you do when you're eating a banana.
It's enough time... realize no what's actually transpired before, because the way it kind of morphs into a gun is like someone's already depressed in the trigger, or
I think he might have had Gold Experience pull the trigger and then turn that gun into a banana, so it's like the gun was ready to go off already, that kind of thing, or the hammer maybe. The hammer was ready.
I also feel like perhaps the advantages of the passage of time between panels, it works better on the page than it does when you have it to animate it.
Yeah. That's possible.
It's a perfect murder, though. Just make a gun out of a banana and you eat the evidence.
Yes. Also, it was a gun which was already there, so they already knew he'd got a gun. So it just looks like he's committed suicide with his own gun. And then I would breathe a sigh of relief that no one had to try and animate him anymore, because again, it seemed like they were having real great difficulty with his hat.
Yeah, I wasn't sure when he did the, like, after his threatening speech, that where it lights up behind him. I was like, that's supposed to be the light bulbs on his hat or something? What's the deal with that light show? Also, was he hiding behind a giant pizza?
He was hiding behind a giant pizza when he went to visit him in the cell.
Okay, I just wanted to double check, because I was just like, that was so odd. I was like, that feels like I dreamt it or something.
How'd he get that nerd? Just like this fucking roll up.
How did he get anything in there?
Slide it in.
Yeah.
And then we get at least a visual appearance of the various stand-powered street urchins who are in Bruno's gang.
Hey, no, you got one former cop in there.
Okay.
I did like him kind of going, it's like, hey, here's my gang. They're all stand users. And it's like, wait, we're just going to meet them all in that one-by-one situation?
You'll meet them all, all at once.
They'll all get their own bit. I get that.
But they all get it's like bit by bit their stand abilities are revealed when they get more assassins coming after them.
But yeah.
Yeah, but just to get, like, meet them all at once is kind of a fun way to just go, like, whoa, that's kind of subverting expectations. It's nice.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. This is based, like, early on after introduced when they start off under adventure after that, where I was having a difficult time grasping how some of the powers work. I know how they work now, but I want to see if that's a little less confusing to read. It's confusing to kind of to watch animated than it is to kind of read it, because some of the layouts and the way it was explained wasn't quite clear.
Hmm. Okay.
At least at first. So I hope they do a better job of this type of making that more apparent to the viewer.
If they're changing Giorno's personality a little to match up with what he eventually becomes, maybe they'll do that as well. Just kind of a the edited version, the kind of one where they know where it was going, so they can do a better job of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that bit of storytelling works. I think even if it works better the second time when you know that he's already set Pol Pot up to kill himself. And then
I figured from the way he was walking out of that prison, it was just like, nah, he's fucking... It's clear he's done something. Like, just, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you just didn't know the full extent of it. But
yeah, the irony of Koichi at that point. I almost expected, like, a gunshot to go off during Koichi's phone call, even though I knew it didn't, because I knew Koichi leaves thinking...
And he hears, like, the siren go off in the prison or something. Yeah, yeah.
Giotto's a great guy. But yeah, it gives that little bit of tension of, like, ooh, is he really a Joestar? Is there a bit of Dio in him as well?
Yeah.
That he's willing to
go. It's an interesting mix. Like, it's like a sense of justice, but a sense of like taking justice into your own hands kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's like it's cold-blooded revenge he takes it.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
He's not even
there
for the revenge to happen.
So it didn't even look like him, and it's just like, I'm going to make it look like you killed yourself. Yeah. There's several bits of it that are just like nasty.
You wouldn't even look him in the eye when he does it. No.
But yeah, a good episode. As I said, this was where it began to felt like it clicked for me. What was the next episode called? Did this mention it?
Find Paul Poe's treasure.
Ah, his inheritance or something. Paul Poe's
treasure. Righty-ho. That's this week's JoJo's Bizarre Adventure taken care of. But what else did we watch this week? It's time for the podcast within a podcast. It's Let's Go! And we start, as we normally do, with Space Battleship Tiramisu. And the episode is episode 4. But there was a Gimlet, is it?
I think it's Gimlet.
Yeah.
There was a Gimlet there, was it?
But there was a Gimlet and AI.
Yep.
That's it.
Because I think when they say the drink, I think they say Gimlet.
Yes.
So,
Not being a drinker, definitely not being a cocktail drinker, not familiar with the drink. And we get a new character, who is, she got artificial universality.
Yes.
Yeah, because he says that can't be copied.
Mm. Yeah, and no further explanation. I can't remember what her name was, though.
Carnaby?
It's another car name, I know that. I deleted my searches because I needed to
flip.
Get my phone.
Calloway,
that's it, yes.
Because my mnemonic was Minute in Butcher, Cab Calloway. There we go.
Okay. I feel like if I knew more about Gundam, I'd probably know what the hell she's taking the mick out of.
It's definitely a Gundam thing, I'm pretty sure. I can't remember whether... I don't know whether it's that creepy girl from Charles Counterattack or supposed to be Lala.
But it's the trope of she obviously respects, maybe loves, her superior officer and that kind of thing.
Yes.
But obviously... Like, it was playing it so straight for so long, I was like, you're not going to go serious on me, are you, Tiramisu? When's the joke coming? And then when it did, I was like, ah, oh, fucking brilliant.
It's a great joke. Because that is eroded incredibly quickly.
Oh, it's so good. And it's just to show that, yeah, this guy's a fucking goober. It's fantastic.
He's an absolute fucking jerk as fuck. It's like,
he wants all the points on his card.
He wants all the clock card points. Yeah. The fuck? He won't even let me have that.
So the crux of the episode, if you haven't seen it, is that, yes he orders her a drink. And then makes her pay for it.
Yeah, when he goes to pay, it's like, yeah, we'll be paying separately. Put all the points on this card. You know, on all this shit, and he has, like, the wallet that's like this, like, and she's like, oh my god, that's like the same wallet he's had since he's probably a teenager. I thought he'd have, like, a nice, like, kind of, what does she say? Like, a nice, like, leather fucking thing. Yes.
But no, he's got a Velcro wallet.
I think it's a Union Jack or something. Just like a cool thing he got when he was young.
Yeah, it's like he bought it when he was on holiday at a gift shop and has kept it since then.
Yeah.
As a kid, I definitely did have a Velcro wallet I bought at a gift shop. And then the second half is the robot, whose name I can't remember, is now completely Haro from Gundam. Deciding that now he's got the Neo Durandal Subaru won't need him anymore, so he's going
to
run away.
Well, it's more advanced than he is, so there's no place for him to plug in and be the ship's AI. So
he's made,
no place for me anymore.
He's made a little knapsack, and he's going to run away from home. Before he goes, yep. he has a go at pretending to be the pilot of the Nero de Randall.
Because as the subtitles explain, he is the brain of like a 3-year-old or something.
An 8-year-old child.
It's like
an
8-year-old. Yeah, it's like a third grader or something. I think
I say. That was it. Yeah, yeah. I was wondering why I went so young with the number.
And then the AI activates, and then the pair of them have a heart to heart about how terrible Subaru is.
He's putting. I need to make some complaints since you're not. I thought he was going to, like, since you're not Subaru, I'm going to call the cops. He's like, since you're not Subaru, I'm going to voice some complaints.
Isn't there like the AI called Lexus X or something?
Lexus 1000 or something.
Oh yeah,
like
it's
that?
Like a number. Yeah, because it's a HAL.
Yeah.
Like, on top of the
yeah.
Of a car.
But he doesn't like the stickers that he's putting on him on the outside of the robot because it's like it's very childish. I'm a classy robot AI. This is kind of bullshit.
And the payoff is that the robot doesn't run away from home. He can remain in a character, which I was pleased because I was like, I like that robot now. He stopped being a delinquent.
Yeah,
I kind of liked him as a delinquent, but yeah.
He was super going to have stupid chats in the cockpit, you know? It's like, you're more than just a little AI robot pal. You're also my friend, or at least a...
You're my little AI robot pal.
It's going to keep me company in my... You'll be alone with me, my hermit existence in the cockpit.
I know it's a very simple fix, but I'm kind of hoping that the cute little version of it that it is now kind of turns into a delinquent again, because I feel like that'd be really funny.
Yeah, it's one of the delinquent thing is like a gag that could sustain itself, but yes, it'll bring it back occasionally, I think.
Yeah, yeah, and now that he's got a new tiny cute body, it'd be a different kind of form of that.
Yeah. I think that was everything. Again, it's short, it's sweet. As the first half, I'd say, is the better half, just because it's, as you said, the setup...
It's a slower setup, but it fucking pays off so good. Mm.
It sets a bomb off when that joke hits. Then we've got... Oh, come on, spreadsheets, open up. Golden Kamuy, episode 15. Let's talk about the past.
Another one going to waste. Hate it. But I mean, episode titles, of course.
Yeah. No, I got you. I was just like, yeah... It's a pity. They're doing it on purpose, though, I swear.
Yeah, must be. What happened there? So they're on the case of the missing skin and trying to recover the guy's body, but while they're worrying about that, a bunch of guys come around to try and get rid of the evidence of the skin so that they won't be able to figure out where to start.
Well, not just get rid of the evidence, but it's a good time to shoot the people who are trying to find the evidence.
Yeah, also kill them if you can, but, you know, just burn down the house would be your primary mission. Secondary, just not kill anybody who's there.
What's the remaining twin called?
I was about to bring him up. I can't remember his name, but he's now wearing a balaclava made of human skin with his ear on the chin or another ear on the chin.
I assume it's... Is it... Oh, fuck, I don't know, because he keeps talking into the ear like it's a fucking radio, and it's really funny.
Assault team's moving my signal. Strike force pattern in alpha.
The others, the non-batshit crazy soldiers in that fucking troop have got to be going like, oh god, we got to fucking follow this guy's orders.
It's going to be even worse after this episode, because quite clearly...
Oh my god, there's so little of this man left.
It's going to chop him down like fucking what's-his-face Dormammu from Dragon Half. It's just going to be like, you know, more and more displaced by Dragon Half, the original thing. It's just like a torso with a head being pulled around in a wheelbarrow or something.
Is he going to start looking for feet that look like his foot? Oh, shit, I hope so.
He's going to replace his limbs with guns.
Replace his limbs with fucking rage by the look of it, yeah.
Yeah, because they're here looking for clues as to help them identify any fake.
There's got to be some clue in the panning process as to what makes a fake different from a real one.
Yes.
And they're hoping that by finding some evidence of his tools or his tanning methods or by looking at some of his models that he's already made, they can figure something out. But then, you know, firebomb through the window. Oh, shit, now we're fighting for our lives.
Yeah. And Nikaido Kohei is the surviving brother. And
okay.
He ends up getting his leg chopped off in this episode.
He's pretty fucking baller in this. I gotta give him that. Like, guy comes at you with a samurai sword and you fucking body tackle him? That's pretty sweet.
No, he'd be fine if he just maintained his focus. It's the fact that...
Oh, yeah, he was holding his own against the fucking samurai. But it's just like, oh, brilliant. Here's that guy I want to kill. Oh, dude, no, you took your eye off the ball there.
Yeah, and we get a flashback to Hijikata and the other old guy.
That was a really nice transition, yeah.
And we get...
Because they can't see each other, that kind of idea. Yeah.
Yes, we get an idea of their past.
Mm.
Together, and we see that Hijikata was a very handsome man as a younger man.
Oh, yeah.
He's still handsome.
Yes. But
silver fox.
But yeah, once you see the younger one, then it is the younger face of that old face we've seen now for 15 episodes.
Yeah, yeah. It's excellent.
There's also some eating, of course.
Oh yeah, you got to get in the food blogging.
Ogata is no fun. Yes. He's just absolutely no crack.
I love the change in the eating, the cookery part of it, because he's just like, I'm fucking not having any of this. And the other guy's like, I don't want to eat a brain. I'm a sophisticated man about town. You know, he's in the woods in a fucking suit, like going hunting.
And then Sugimoto is just indoctrinated. It's just like, here, Sugimoto, have the brain. Okay, mom.
When he raises his hand to tell on your man, I was just like, you fucking child. It was brilliant.
We get a serpent like hanging off the back of
Ushiyama.
Oh, like she's a backpack. Oh,
yeah, man. And also later on,
if they make a figure of him, they better add her as a backpack.
Also,
that's
later on,
be
she's like curled up on his chest like a cat when they're asleep.
like a cat on a dog.
Yeah, well, I get the feeling it's like he exudes like a protective manliness to her, whereas.
Like, she calls him fucking Dick Sensei, yes. He's the most manly person in any room.
Whereas Shirayashi and Sugimoto, up to this point, she's having to make sure they don't accidentally get killed by the wildlife. And
yeah, she's weirdly enough, like, despite them protecting her, especially Sugimoto protecting her, but, like, yeah, she's kind of, like, watching out for them, like, most of the time.
He's fucking sissam. Fall down into the gorge, but don't mind him.
Yeah, I mean, like, her and Sugimoto, it's like a brother-sister kind of thing. But obviously, half the time, she's having to be the older sister, which is weird.
Fucking Shiraishi, my idiot son.
And yeah, we get introduced to the guy who's in the opening credits, who's the warder at the prison they go to. And apparently, he took Hijikata from the prison he was previously at to the one they're going to be breaking into.
Yeah, because in the flashback, your man's like, he's like, I don't want you to see that guy. And he's like, I know I killed your son and shit, but you can't be holding a grudge. Also, you're going to be fucking moved after a year or something like that in this position. He's like, I'm bringing him with me kind of thing. I'm not letting this fucking go until I see the light die from his eyes, I believe was his stipulation. Fucking hell.
But there's like bits of dialogue which makes you think that maybe their relationship has changed somewhat in the period between this flashback and now.
Well, he does seem to be the kind of guy who brings people who hate him onto his side, for lack of a better term. Yeah.
We also get a bit with Inkaramat and... Who's the other guy?
Tanigaki.
Tanigaki and Bona, the kid.
Yeah. I love the fact that the guy straight away was like, hey, you're Japanese, why are you dressed like an Ainu? it's kind of like, oh, shit.
That's appropriation.
So they need to work on their cover story, and the kid is very insistent.
Cover story, it constantly involves the fact that Karamat is perfectly okay with him grabbing her boobs.
It's a very important part of the cover story.
Big sister, little brother. Very close indeed.
Like, too close. Like, you know the kind of close. You've seen those stories of how closeness is.
And they're always overly complicated beyond that as well.
There's too much drama, dude. You've got too much drama in your stories, kid. What the fuck are you reading?
No, but you got me. Got me like have those little extra details there, because then that makes people less.
that makes it more real and more difficult to lie about.
Yeah, they're gonna be. They're gonna be like. I pens about questioning it, because people say, "Look, you got a lot of details worked out there. Some of them sound kind of weird, but you know."
I did his revising story where, like, none of them are related, but the groping was still an integral part of the fucking cover.
There's also a bit where all the adults are having a conversation around the table, and then they turn to Shirayashi, who's sitting in the corner with his feet in each of his hands, rolling backwards and forwards.
I didn't think we'd all be dependent on you, but, shit. Okay, sure, yeah, she gets shit together.
But then he has a nightmare of Sugimoto finding out. Because all the way, Sugimoto's still going, like, I'm sure we've run into Hijikata before.
Yeah, and his nightmare is Sugimoto saying, like, yeah, fucking, that was him then, wasn't it? You've been working against us this whole time. Stab, 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 stab,
stab, stab, stab.
Like, gotta go. Gotta escape.
Yeah, it kind of almost goes.
He's good at
like...
the practical art of escaping, yeah. But he's not good at the fucking, the follow through. That's the part he sucks at, because he keeps getting caught. He's always in trouble.
And the nightmare's in kind of like a Mike Mignola style, rather than the usual style.
Oh, yeah, but, yeah, the solid blacks and everything, yeah. Hmm.
So then he runs away, going, oh, Sugimoto's going to find me out. I'll just abandon this. Let's abandon this plan. And then gets out on the streets. He's surrounded by soldiers.
That's the guy.
Oh. Yes, he can always escape from a current situation, but never out of the next situation that he escapes into.
Yeah. There's a little bit with Tsurumi and the new guy. Tsukishima, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Where he basically seems to be like... It's like if asking Tsukishima if this is a good plan, and Tsukishima's like agreeing, but then like the camera lingers on his face for a little.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing I was noticing in the background. What's your man saying with the? My brain is just like it's just they got Dick Sensei just fucking emblazoned there, and I can't think of his goddamn name.
Ushiyama.
Yeah.
Is Ushiyama and. The woman, former prisoner, are they a thing now? Because the way he delicately took her out of the burning building.
Well, he's still in love with them. I don't think, they're interested at all. They may only still be interested
I don't know which way it's
body
going.
Parts
like, is it
to improve their body even further.
that does seem to be her her go-to thing. Unless something else comes up, but it hasn't really... hasn't really told what she's getting out of this coalition of weirdos.
Not dying is the key thing.
That's very important, sure. Keeping her skin.
Yes.
Probably pretty important, yeah.
I don't know whether they'll examine the weird neo-human thing that that character has going on.
Yeah, I'm sticking to she for now, just because it seems to be presenting as woman. I'll just go with
that
for the time being.
But yeah, the character is established is
I'm trying
like
to improve
my body. Frankensteining themselves, aren't they?
Mm.
Yeah.
In science, which makes no sense.
absolutely not.
Which
ancient Chinese secret,
yeah,
huh?
Which reminds me a bit of a line in this week's Zombieland saga, where I'm not sure if. It's a foreshadowing line, or whether they're just sweeping over storyline, not even inconsistency, but something which is completely illogical. But we'll get to that. I'd watch this before I'd watch things which are technically better than this, because it's got its hooks into me again. I think that's deliberate. I believe they're cutting stuff out.
Yeah, it started off pretty strong.
To like snowball it to breaking into the prison, so I can get to that.
I have seen too many GIFs of Shirayashi from the next episode that I really want to watch it, like, right now. Just of, you know what I'm talking about, the Golden Kamuy faces, the faces that are pulled, and I'm just like, yes, I need that in my life.
But this game getting all greased up and sliding through something?
No, just the pulling of weird faces that they've never pulled before, that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, this still stays pretty fucking solid. It's There's things that are technically better, but not really in terms of like story and characters.
Well, this is just entertaining.
Absolutely, yeah.
You could have as much like spick and span and polish and something as possible, but if it doesn't kind of grab you in the right way, then it doesn't amount to much. But this is like, it's rough and ready, but it's entertaining, and that just speaks volumes about the material it's adapting. And that's just like. Because very, very good. If you can read it, great, because you get like the full Facebook. But if you're happy just to kind of watch it here, because it's ahead of worst published in English anyway, then yeah, don't be left out, because you excuse me, I feel like missing out on something because not seeing it in the ideal way.
Then we've got Thunderbolt Fantasy Sword Seekers 2 Episode 4
Close Foes.
Okay, there we go. Take it away.
Shang Buhan and Ling and Lang are racking their brains. How are we going to deal with this poison? Who turns up but Lin Setsu? Hey, it's me, Lin Setsu, your good buddy. He's like, get the fuck out of here. What are you doing here? How did you find me in this cave? Oh, I have my ways. And, it's just about kind of trying to have him out of his predicament. But Shang Bahan had fun saying, no, I don't want none of that, man. Like, any time I team up with you, it's always the fun trouble for me. And why is that? Why are you always fucking making life hard to me? I don't understand. It's like, sure, it's a lot of fun. We're good buddies, remember? And who's this gentleman right here? Like, I'll let him do the talking there. I'm Ling. I'm Lang. I'm a talking beaver. Oh wow! There's got some really weird kind of guys in the west, the country across the Wasteland Spirits. Fun. Also, it must not be such a hard walk if you could get here as well. A lot of the Princess of Cruelty. Come on, you guys are just like flooding to the west now. Oh, actually, yeah. Now you say that, crossing the desert. No, it wasn't as frightful as I thought it was going to be. Yeah, like isn't there like. I suppose we let like a giant dragon in Hellfire Valley breathes fire around you. And it's like, yeah, he was pretty tough, but we got past him. And it wasn't as hard as it was going to be, because this guy only had one wing. Why? It's like someone just chopped it off. And Shang Bahan was like, yeah, well, that was self-defense. It was him or me.
So he's causing all the migration, yeah.
Yeah, same thing to the Campbell village, you know, those guys that are like, stringing up and eat you alive. Yeah, well, we came over to the village and it was just nothing but dead bodies there. And Shang Bahan's like, self-defense! Self-defense! Take care after me.
It's a weird thing where you hear that, like, by the good guy making the world or universe a safer place, he's actually made it a far worse place.
It's not bad, but you're trying to do the right thing, but, you know.
Yeah.
Oh. And then it's like, so what's up with you then, Shang Bahan? Oh, I got poisoned. I got all kept my leg right now, but I can't go nowhere. Oh, that's right. Well, lucky me, your good buddy, is versed in such things. Let me just get out my anti-venom kit and we'll figure out what this is. And we get into a whole process of just trying out different salts and extracts of animals to, by process of elimination, figure out what poison this is or isn't. So it's not from an insect, it's not from a fish or any kind of mosquito, it's not from a plant. It's some kind of animal. We don't know which one it is. So the best thing we can do is, so you don't know what kind of animal poison it is. No, the key to that is to get like a stronger poison essence of an animal that's bigger than that. Okay, that doesn't sound too bad. Yeah, but to guarantee it, we better like go for the top of the food chain, and that is dragon. So we better go and get some dragon stuff, and that'll sort you out no problem. Meanwhile, the corrupt cop. He is returns from his rounds and sees that Lin Setsu has gone from saying, okay, how about that? I think I'll go for a walk. Nobody's following me. I'm just going for a walk. I'm just going to relax. And he uses that time to put up a signal that the Princess of Cruelty recognizes as being from her boss. And he's like, finds him instead. What the fuck are you doing here? How do you know the signal of my evil boss? Oh, I don't know. Being a corrupt cop, you get to know a couple of things. So it's like, I see you after Sorcerer's Sword Index, so you got some of it anyway. And it's like, yeah, well, I'm kind of to be after it as well. I'm also want to bring that Shang Buhan guy to justice, which you want to kill him as well. And you know the old saying, well, it doesn't say as much. No, if the hunter touches two hairs, you're gonna lose both. So how about you work with me to towards a common goal, and I won't arrest you as well after the fact when we get the stuff back. And she's like, you motherfucker. Sorry. I gotta do my job, you know. I came all the way across the Western Spirits to try and apprehend this guy and get this stuff back. So, you know, if you're gonna be in my way, then I'm gonna have to volunteer with you. This is complete fucking vile guy down to the core. And anyway, he wants to get the thing back because he wants to get all the credit for retrieving the source from the sword and the next himself. And what was going on there? Oh, and then while Shang Buhan is hanging out in the cave, Lin Setsu and Ling and Lang depart by a demon bird to the edge of Western Spirits, and they kind of go in there and they get attacked by zombies. And Lin Setsu says, okay, I'll just relax around here and not do nothing, because if you're like Shang Buhan's partner from like way back when, you probably know to handle yourself. And he does. He's like shredding the Biwa and all the cool sound of attacks. He's bonking them on the head with the Biwa. But it's like, oh, we got a secret move we haven't even showed you yet. Or we can pull out the handle with that Lang's attached to it. There's a sword inside. And just tap up the guys when you all good old. And he says back, well, if you're fucking Lin Setsu, fucking like gentleman thief and fucking gentleman fucking vagabond about this country, then you should fucking get to work yourself and help me out here. And then I'll know that you're somebody worth dealing with. So it's like, okay, doesn't even go for the sword. It's like, soaks up the pipe. It's a deep old fucking pull on that and just start shooting fire out of it instead of toasty zombies. It's like, okay, these guys are getting on well. I mean, even my dad, I'm presuming they're going to fight a dragon, which could wind up being a guy in a suit. I hope it is.
Like a Scooby-Doo scenario, all right.
No, as in like...
I see. Right.
Puppets, though, it's going to be a live-action thing. It could be like...
I was imagining puppets inside a puppet dragon, all right. that's okay, too.
A person inside like a dragon costume. Or it could be a very elaborate design, or it could just go for a CG thing, because... maybe just covering it very well, but when they're like telling the story earlier about the dragon and getting his wing cut off, and it's like it seemed to be a little more sophisticated than just like the CG models they use sometimes. So I'm hoping to get a nice kind of apparatus there, cool dragon thing. Get a show off the kind of skills. The puppets are all cool and good, but I want to see what else they can bring to life that manner. Yeah, it's fun. Again, this is just like consistently entertaining, and its unique look is. Let's make it stand out as well. I'm always quite enjoyed. Puppets are always so cool, and I'm always impressed with how they can just rig them up with all the different special effects. Like, we're not relying so much on, relying as well like on the special effects done in post afterwards, but just like the last episode where they had them all rigged up with like this blood fountain spraying out the next dump. Those are all cool and good. So, yeah, it's always a fun time with this.
Then we've got Jingai-san no Yome, Episode 4, Transfer Student and Wife, in which a transfer student joins the class of Tamari and your other lad from Sora from the previous episode. And this transfer student appears to be some kind of... it's another non-human creature.
Alright, so it's either an invisible man, or there's nothing actually there, because it was just like stuffing the bandages into the hole where the head was earlier. I don't quite understand what the fuck I'm looking at, that kind of thing.
Some kind of all-consuming void.
Yeah, entirely possible.
But unlike the previous two, this one can communicate with the human characters, because it can write things on a pad. In Japanese.
Yeah.
It's sarcastic things.
Well, then it's going to school. It's human enough to go to school, I guess. Yes.
Anyway, the joke is that the super cool guy in the class...
Who your man recalls specifically saying, it's like, oh, I'll never be a part in a relationship. Yes. That's not for me, man.
My standards are too high. That kind of thing. And then we get a flashback of how he just happened to be passing...
The teacher's lounge,
where the teacher was showing off the wife catalogue. And he ran in demanding to be the wife.
Yeah, he saw the way it was trying to pile its bandages inside itself. Yes. I'm not exactly sure. Is it? Maybe it's just bandages. And it was just like, that's too fucking cute, the way it's trying to pull itself together. Be my wife. Or let me be your wife. How this works. Your wife. That's it.
Yes. Because apparently this is exactly his type.
It was cute to him, so yeah, go for it.
But he doesn't know how it feels about him, so he draws a smiley face on its bandages.
I noticed in the flashback it didn't have a face, and I was like, that's going to be the joke, yeah. I think. I drew a face on it.
Previously described him as a demon wife.
That
is only like 2.5 minutes long. That's pretty much the episode. There was a bit about cooking for Kanogi-san at the start.
Oh yeah, he's not sure if he should cook or for his husband.
Spouse.
Is the monster the husband, or is the monster indeterminate?
They are definitely the wives of these monsters.
Yeah, they're the guys are the wives. I understand that. But it's just the monsters, we're just going to go with spouse.
Yeah, no, because
I don't know what the monsters are. I'm just going to call them monsters.
Tomorrow's explaining that, yeah, he feels like they're making a connection if he cooks for...
even though it only eats concrete blocks.
Yes. And then Sora's like, oh, maybe I should do that for my spouse as well, the strange pink bald monster. I don't know whether the other monsters show up in the next two, even more human than this one is, so. I'm enjoying the steadfast refusal for any explanation.
Cute boys think weirdos are cute. That's about as much as I know.
Hey, the weirdos are not cute themselves, but they are just...
But they are really fucking weird.
Unusual.
Yeah, they're not, like, stereotypical cute, that's the thing. It's like, they're not...
Yeah, I guess there's that as well,
They're not hideous monsters, but there's, like, something off about them. They should be a cute animal, but it's like, oh... They
unnerve me slightly, I think, is my problem.
It's like, the pink thing is, like, the... should be the cutest, but then you discover
it's like a little dog, sure,
it's wearing this hat because it's got a bald spot and it's very conscious about its bald spot, and if it curses you it makes you bald as well.
Again, more questions than answers.
Righty ho then, Mr. Tonigawa's Middle Management Blues, episode 16, Natural Enemies.
Oh, I was bracing myself for this because I think I'm just enjoying your recast of it a lot more.
I don't think I'm really doing it justice half the time.
It's me, Lev.
Okay, that's good then. So Tanigawa is being threatened by the number three guy at Teihai, the Kurosaki. The problem he has with Kurosaki is Kurosaki can call the fucking, can call Hyodo on his bullshit. Like he's like, hey boss, you're drooling there a bit, you want to clean yourself up. And instead of like fucking, because Tanigawa was like, if I fucking did that, he starts smacking me with the fucking cane. But him doing, he's like, oh, thank you, I nearly made a fool of myself. And he's kind of dabbing at his chin and everything like that. And he can just say shit to the boss and like be matter of fact and tell the truth and not be a yes man. And yet he gets away with it every fucking time. And he's going to pull ahead of me. And the way they're representing this is he's Tonigawa is moving through a minefield in like full, like, you know, mine detecting gear. And your man's just sprinting ahead with no fucking concern whatsoever. And then, like, the representation is Tonigawa is, like, running in behind him, trying to... He's just, every time he compliments, or not compliments, every time he says something, like, there's, like, ooh, you're treading close to danger there, he reacts to the same way as, like, he's like, hey, boss, this thing is kind of crap, isn't it? And Tonigawa's like, yes, I also agree wholeheartedly with that. Like, just staying in his fucking thing, trying to keep up with him. And he can't quite even overtake him with the slight jibes and stuff, because anytime he does, the boss just goes berserk on him. The second part of the episode, and this at the boss's new restaurant, they're eating stuff, and he can't quite pull ahead of him. It's really annoying. But the second part of the episode is... the boss has decided to buy a racehorse that has the same haircut as him. You know, like a shock of wild hair, white hair. And I forgot what the fuck he calls it, like a cool name, like Thunder something or something like that. And he's like, all right, Tanigawa, you need to buy a horse too. How about this motherfucking thing? And the boss's horse is like, it's bred from like two thoroughbred prize winners and all this kind of thing. So I was like, oh yeah, this horse is going to go places. And they give Tanigawa something that looks mostly like a donkey, but like horse-shaped. But it does also have Tanigawa's haircut, which I thought was great. So, you know, white hair, but like, you know, the short buzz cut. Yeah. But like the buzz cut on a horse kind of thing. I don't know what it's called. I don't know about horse haircuts. And so it's like, yeah, we're going to call this. And I forget what the hell he calls it. I wish I could remember any of the fucking horse names. But anyway. And then 2 years later. So apparently this happened. It's either a flashback or something. I don't know. Or maybe like, yeah, it is actually 2 years later. It doesn't matter. Tanigawa's horse is doing really fucking good. And the boss's one, Hyoda's one, is not doing so great. So he's getting really frustrated, and they go to the stables again, and then the stable hands are explaining. It's like, oh, yeah, it's really weird. We thought your horse would be going places. And but he really needs, I mean, based off the breeding, he should be doing very well. So it's very strange. And the boss kind of like looks, goes over to Tonegawa's horse and goes like, ah, yes, me and my horse. You're going to have to do a lot better for me, my horse. Kind of looks at the audience. And Tonegawa's like, and the announcer explains, Tanigawa does what he always fucking does and goes like, yes, sir, that is totally your horse, and this horse over here is my horse. And the commentators on the race the next day are kind of like, oh, this is a blah 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 horse. It lost 32 pounds. Its color looks a little off. I hope they're treating it well. And next comes this horse, which has gained 32 pounds, and that one seems to have a different color as well. Very odd. The boss has somehow managed to make this fucking work. And wouldn't you know it, fucking, for once, Tonegawa's former horse isn't the first out of the things, and it's like, it's neck and neck, and Tanigawa is, like, the boss is cheering for, inverted commas, his horse, whereas Tanigawa is inwardly cheering, or going like, okay, don't win the boss's horse, formerly my horse, and renaming it every time in his head. And it's like neck and neck, and they're just going to thing it. But wouldn't you know it, Kurosaki's horse is like, oh, that's my horse, and he's pulling up from the back, and he goes through the thing, and he actually beats both of them. Mm-hmm. And both of them have a disgusted look in his face. It's like, what? But fucking, you know. And it's just like total disgust. So I'm guessing that's why he doesn't pull ahead of Tonegawa in the end, because it's shit like that he pulls. It's like, he didn't technically do anything wrong. But the boss, like, fucking switched horses to get this. Come on. Give him something. That's it. That's the episode. It's good. Good bit of just stupid-ass motherfuckers.
Then we've got Zombieland Saga, Episode 4, Warming Dead Saga, in which they've run out of money. So Sakura's plan for them to release a single cannot be done until they make more money. And so they are organised to perform at a get-together for a pharmaceutical
company. Retreat,
company,
I think, isn't it? And they're just standing in for the other guy, the other idols who pulled out at the last minute kind of thing.
And they're going to... It's for a company who make these...
What are these things? I'm not actually familiar with them.
I thought they were heat patches, but I guess they've got some sort of medicinal thing in them as well. Or maybe they are just heat patches. I don't know. But it seems to be this is a piece of legislation I was not aware of in Japan. So these are things you can buy over the counter, but you can only apply them to yourself, because if you applied them to somebody else, then you're acting as if you were a medical professional.
Which they keep doing, yes. And the subtitles have to keep coming up. It's like, please do not do this at home. This is actually fucking super illegal. Do not
but
fucking
stop
this.
Doing that later on, where they just start slapping them all over everybody in the audience.
Yeah, it's like, everything about this is super sketchy, guys. It was pretty funny. And also, I was like, did this show actually, like, take a fucking contract to explain these things to me? Because I wasn't aware of this product before this show. So successfully advertised,
yeah, so
Kotaro's, I guess. Kotaro's,
yeah, like, trying to do a sponsorship deal with this company. He hasn't quite done it yet, but them doing this show is, like, part a step of the way to be able to do this. And he's, like, assuring them that, oh, yeah, the girls are practicing really hard.
Yeah.
And
And like, he's, you see, he seems to be genuinely excited. It's like, oh my god, you guys are actually like revitalizing the economy in Saga, and I want to revitalize like the culture in Saga, and I want to bring it in with this. And I really respect what you guys are doing. So like, it seems to be genuine. Like, oh my god, we have the same fucking thing.
The girls are like, hey, we've been locked up in that house for this long. We should go and do a bit of sightseeing ourselves, because that's what Kotaro's told them he's going to be doing. And so they ignore him, and they do a bit of sightseeing, and his meeting in this cafe is framed in such a way, you know, you're just waiting for them to walk past the window.
Yeah, it's always fucking shot from that side where you can see out the window, just like kind of like the audience are peeking out waiting for them to fucking come up down
on
the road.
Left, the woman from the pharmaceutical company is on the right, and then there's this perfectly rectangular window sitting between them. And you're like,
excellent setup, and the exact payoff you were expecting.
They walk past, and so he like makes a seductive grab to this woman's chin, so she doesn't notice that the people who'll be performing later just walk past when he's just told her that they were practicing really hard. But it turns out they were practicing, because this day out bonded them all together, so they're all on the same page by the end of this. Even apparently Tai, who is still very much a zombie. The other thing about the Kotaro meeting, I just remembered, is that he's turned up to this meeting and he still has dried squid in his top pockets.
He's still wearing the thing he wears every day. Why would he wear anything else?
But yeah, when it's like a public foot wash thing they're using.
Yeah, like a little foot bath thing, yeah.
And this is where the line comes up, I'm not sure whether this is foreshadowing or just ignoring the fact, one of the characters points out, how do we become zombies anyway? In Japan, isn't everybody cremated?
Yeah, they all kind of like, huh. Oh, well, best move on from the topic. And I was like, yeah, actually, fuck. There'd be no fucking chance. Especially because a lot of you have been dead for a long time. It's a weird one.
It's clarified that Junko was like a solo performer rather than a group performer.
And that's her kind of nervousness about doing this thing. It's similar to the one who... We're not sure exactly what went wrong in her idol career, but something
and like
obviously
a little
did.
Bit, as they're deciding to go not practice and go wandering around the town, you kind of get like a reversal of the people who were on board with practicing previously, now don't want to practice, and the two previous idols are like, we really should practice. Yugiri is like, well, I've not actually been around a modern town. It'd be quite nice for me to see how time has changed.
I am from the past.
Yes.
But they're all, after they wash their feet together and then dry them off in these,
it's like a little wooden thing that everyone sits around in a circle and puts their legs into to dry. But like, because they're all doing this like as a group, and it's just enough for all of them to put their legs in.
We don't see Tai has joined them until the full wide shot.
So she's trying, despite, you know, still being very much so a zombie.
And she doesn't bite anyone this episode.
But there
is a good bit where her face is like sliding down a... glass window as a bunch of them are looking at cakes in a window, and she's one of them. But the zombie stuff doesn't happen till after the end, because they go in, they test out the product, they're like, oh, this is great, really.
And they figure they can do it because it's fine if it's a medical thing, because we're zombies and we're already dead. What's the worst that
can
happen?
We should incorporate this into our performance.
Because this is the product they're selling, and it'll get them excited that we're excited about their product. And it's literally a product that makes you excited. What could possibly go wrong?
The question is answered, was the CGI slightly ropey last week? As a parody, no, it's just slightly ropey CGI because it's an idol show.
They do have some dancy bits where, like, it's when it's focused on a particular character and it's like, okay, that's been animated regularly and it looks good. But, yeah, the CG is what
it
is.
And Yugiri's model is really weird. She has really weird giant boobs in her CG model.
Just like a horny CG animator is what's going on, I think.
Every animator.
I don't know which show I'm pointing about this week.
Most animators.
Fair enough, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Kitter is off the hook this week, even though it's a little bit horny, but there's something which has got far hornier animators going on in it. So they do the show, which is fine, goes off perfectly, but then some of them decide they want to sneak into the baths after they've been told you can't go in the baths, you're zombies, the makeup will wash off.
And but it's like, well, if we sneak in there tonight, yeah, it'll be fine.
We'll see us. However.
And obviously the delinquent is trying to, convince Sakura.
Sakura, yeah. Just us two, no one will notice. But then Junko overhears them and she's like, but I want to go in the baths as well.
I would also like to go to the
baths. So they all go to the baths and it's fine until the head of the pharmaceutical company shows up in the baths as well. And weirdly, if there's any horny animation, it's on her this episode.
It's kind of great. Yeah, yes. All the horniness just focus on the old lady. I think that's pretty great.
And then,
because she's even doing the the heroine running away from zombies in a bathrobe or in a fucking towel, basically.
And it just is just zombie slapstick from that point on as they try to.
They thought they could sneak away underwater because it's like, well, we don't need to fucking breathe, guys. It'll be fine. But it's like, ugh, what if your head slides off? Then you're in a bit of trouble.
You're too close to the rocks. You go down too quick and your head flies off, which is what happens to Sakura.
Then it's going to be floating in the water, freaking out the manager. She's going to run into a whole load of zombies that come looking for the other zombies.
And then the punchline is that... she was so scared during the night, she cannot recall anything which happened in the previous 24 hours. So therefore,
as one of the employees explains to the manager, where he's like, oh, thank you very much, I hope you'll consider our services in the future. It's like, don't talk to her now. She got really freaked out and has amnesia, like 24-hour amnesia. It's really weird.
Hysterical amnesia.
And she's just there, like, crouching in the corner near the bus, just, like, shaking, and the manager has not noticed.
If you thought Bono's dad looks tired in the episode we'll be talking about later, she is far worse than that.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, she kind of looks worse than the zombies did.
She looks worse than when she went into the fucking... before she went into the bat, so it hasn't really done the rejuvenating thing. Not for her, no.
They're back at square one. But they're going to get a budget somehow. By dressing up as
chicken. You know the thing where his glasses fly off? Yeah, maybe like a fast food thing as well. I'm not entirely sure. He's doing his Michael Jackson thing again, apparently. Yes. Getting that on it.
Apparently.
His glasses fall off at one point, but he puts them back on. And I'm wondering, does he actually have red eyes? Is he a zombie? That kind of thing. Or are they just doing that to try and make me think of possible plot holes? But, you know, they just go like, hey, there aren't any corpses in Japan to become zombies. But, you know, fuck it. Let's just ignore these facts.
It's got that formula going where it's like every start of the episode is hit them in front of a blackboard with him. And then he gets to deliver all his best lines of the episode. Of like really leaning into the craziness of his delivery.
Yeah.
I don't think there are zero corpses in Japan.
The odds of them there being corpses to make zombies is considerably reduced.
Yeah.
There's a lot suspect about this entire situation.
Yeah, probably. Because I'm just thinking of, Kurosagi Corpse Delivery Service, like the manga, which is about people finding dead bodies and then, fulfilling their last wishes and delivering them somewhere. And they come across their fair share, not just
accidents and stuff. Yeah.
So it probably is just... We've gone somewhere. But as you say, one's been dead for like the best part of a century. Obviously, might have been much to work with. What kind of arcane ritual does that work here?
I mean, like all the other girls point out, it's like, hey, Sakura, how come you don't have a fucking memory? And how come you woke up before all the rest of it? She's like, I don't know. I don't have any memory. So there's a lot of questions.
I'm sure that bit is a little, again, it's like,
yeah, I feel like that they're going to cover that, but I'm not sure they're going to cover all the other fucking questions. They're just bringing them up to be brazen about
it. Like, you may have asked this question, so we're going to ask this question. Yeah.
So, we fucking caught you. We knew it beforehand. That's why we put it in the show. We're not going to address it, but deal. Yeah.
Righty-ho. Then we've got Karakuri Circus, episode 3. Oh, boy, what was this called? I'll have to go to Amazon Pro.
Abyss.
What was it?
Abyss.
In which the plot moves on apace.
yeah, fucking this was, they really fucking rocket through like a good kind of section, it feels like here.
So they arrive at the Saiga compound. There is a bunch of puppeteers waiting for them. It's puppeteers versus
and guys with you know, yes, lead pipes and stuff.
Some goons, yeah.
And it turns out like the entire compound is got Karakuri booby traps.
But they were saying like, you cannot get past this Karakuri gate, and I was like, they could just hop the wall, dude.
Yeah, go around. Unless the wall is also some kind of Karakuri wall where it sets you on fire if you don't.
It could be. I guess we didn't get as far.
Maybe in the
Blu-ray
version, you actually get to see that guy go into the wood chipper,
Insers,
as he does in the comic. basically it's like it's pincers and like a mangle type thing, because it's dragging in his puppet and he can't get his fingers out of the strings and he gets dragged into it with it. Meanwhile, the uncle is trying to get Masaru to agree to be his son.
And he's being perfectly nice and normal and everything, but it's just like, I am super creeped out.
He's
as
the
kid. Like, it's
he
just
keeps
like,
on referring to our heroes as being evil, and Masaru is like, no, they're not evil.
I got you away from the bad guys, don't worry about it. It's like, those guys are cruel, dude.
Them. They're nice. No. You are a weirdo. Then...
And that the worst part, I think, was, and obviously this when he kind of broke, is like, it was like, I gotta go to the bathroom. It was like, I'll come with you, like right behind him. And I was like, it was just nasty.
And then he manages to run off and he finds his dad's journal.
Secret diary
plan?
His
dad's evil plan, whereas apparently...
Our plan.
I
mean, has he faked his death? That is the question.
Like, if he sets up his son as, like, the... He didn't say scapegoat. He said sacrifice or something, didn't he?
Yes.
The base,
the Masaru's bait to draw out this ancient clan of...
And make them infight among themselves and make themselves weaker by infighting. It seems like that'd be a bad idea to do that plan and fucking die. So it would be a very good plan if you... stayed alive to fucking reduce the power base and that kind of thing.
And then outside, the guy from the Slaughter Squad is explaining that both the Kidnap Squad and the Slaughter Squad all come from this village, who are all super, who've been raised as puppeteers since being children, and they used to be this Saiga company. They employed the Saigas to build puppets for them, but over time the Saigas seem to have got the power, and now they have to pay the Saigas.
Yeah, yes, for their weaponized puppets and that kind of thing. Mm.
And then Masaru gets found by his uncle, who beats him up.
Badly. Like,
I'm glad they didn't show a lot of that. That was very uncomfortable, but that's what it's going for, so...
And then we get explained. Then Shirogane explains, "Oh, so you've been taught to be puppeteers since you're a child." Well, I was born a puppeteer.
Smash.
And then we get a hint of her past with these three old women training her since birth to destroy all puppets
with puppets.
Yes. One of whom I assume is the main character, because she got like a massive like character design promotional thing.
She's in the opening credits, you can see her.
Mm. Is it the lady with like one eye or something? Yeah, or
she
maybe
has,
just a false eye.
I think she has like one milky eye.
Okay. I thought it was a glass eye or something. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they fall, but they get through the gate, but then they fall in a pit. But Narumi tries to rescue Shirogane and follows her in, and he basically saves her by letting her crash onto his body as it hits the rocks.
Yeah, this was like he was also in the middle of having a I was going to say a panic attack. What are the attacks called
Zonifa?
Zonifa syndrome. Yeah. With the one person stuck in a pit, badly bruised up, with the one person who's not going to laugh at his bullshit.
But she smiles.
So if we're operating, saying where your body reacts to the feelings of
positive social
emotions or relaxed around you, and you thought, well, the easiest one to do that is laughter. That's all right, but obviously for her, it's difficult for her to pull off. She's not used to that kind of thing. And also in her mind, she's supposed to be an emotionless destruction machine. But he was kind of saying, no, you're not. Like you've got a right to go and live and be your own different to anybody else. And he kind of says, okay, how about this? This one will make you laugh. I'm like, you and me, we're going to be an item. You're going to be my girl. And he's like, he didn't listen laugh at that, but it was like, that doesn't sound unpleasant.
And yeah, then, that doesn't sound like a joke to me, was the way she kind of put it. And he's like, oh, but that emotional kind of response, a positive emotional response, I imagine, takes him out of it, it seems.
I feel like it's a bit more of a smile in the comic than she gives here.
But they have shown him focusing on her smile in dealing with the kid and everything. To see, it's like, oh, she actually looks kind of nice when she's with the kid. Other than that, she seems kind of like a dick. I do like the fact they're kind of wearing, like, not matching outfits, but they're both wearing, like, a white outfit. Sure, they're on the same team.
I just well, like, no, he's ditched, like, the vest and jeans. He's in there in the proper gear. And I would
except
be like
the runners, that's pretty good.
I don't know, it's sensible footwear.
It fits, yeah.
Yep. I was liking Shirogane's motorbike jacket too. She kind of just like discarded that immediately after arriving at the compound, but I don't know.
Yeah,
he always looks like a completely different character dressed in his martial arts gear. But...
He looks less buff, weirdly enough, but yeah, I do appreciate the kung fu aesthetic. It's nice.
And the uncle's like, oh, I'm going to show you your friends are dead, and then puts the camera on and it's like, oh, no, hang on, they're still alive.
But he appeared to get a phone call that was saying, he's like, yeah, maybe the phone call was like, yeah, they totally fell in the pit. Ah, brilliant. Then they're dead. Not waiting to see. He's like, okay, did you check the footage to see if they're dead? Because he just wants to use that to convince the kid. He's like, well, if I can show you your savior is being dead, then you totally become my
son. We also learned that her name's Eleanor as well in this.
Yes.
Yeah, she says that's not her name anymore, but... Or she doesn't associate it as her name.
And so, Masaru sort of has a brief flashback to... What's the line that Narumi had given previously? Anyway, whatever it was, it's enough for him to be convinced that he can throw himself out of a window. I don't think he knew how high he was up, to be honest.
No. It was kind of the thing where he just, like, and you can see, like, and everyone reacts to the same way. His look has completely changed, where he's just like, because he's decided to be stronger, because he's decided to live, he can totally, it's about being able to throw your life on the line.
And luckily,
I can't remember the exact
luckily
wording
on the
of
ground,
it. Yeah,
there was somebody else's life to break his fall.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But they're all impressed by it, though, because like they're lands in the middle of like little skirmish between the kidnap squad, the kill squad, and the man Ariel is there, and he's like, he's this 10-year-old child that fell out of trees, he's battered, but he's standing up and saying, "You, I got $1,000 problems. I'm gonna fucking hire you. You're gonna work for me. I got the money. You know I got the money. So let's just do this thing." And
the guy kind of like,
"This kid's fucking serious." Look in his eyes like a beast with a thirst to live.
There's a lot of good moments like that. Like at the start as well, you had your one asking him, it's like, well, why do you want to save the young master kind of thing? And he sees like a little preschooler like fall right onto his goddamn face. And he's like, that's why, but I don't need to explain that.
I got my reasons.
We're not even close to the true craziness of this story.
Really? Because I'm fucking loving it so far.
It's dropping a lot of threads
There's a lot of things dropped this episode, but...
Okay.
We're not anywhere near to the explaining of what's really going on in this story.
Right, okay.
And I know the outline of it, but I need to see the story to actually understand myself what it is. It's like the outline is curious enough. Because obviously we've not seen the evil circus we were promised at the very start of this TV show.
Well, they're the big fucking deal. It's part of the title,
Yeah. This is as far as I've read, so I'm excited to see what happens next.
Yeah, I had so much time to try to cover a bit of openness, but before I realized it was coming out in a matter of weeks, and I thought, oh, I'm just going to let this just kind of wash over me. It'll be good and fun. It's going to be a long ride. And it's paying off so well. And just knowing that a little bit of what may or may not be in store, the ambition of things, the kind of promise of things to come, this is keeping me on. Fun. It's fun in of itself right now, but just to know that it's going to get fucking bigger and the scope is going to be more, so much more fucking bigger and wider and more ambitious, and just kind of looking forward to let that happen. It's good. I love it.
I think one of the key things in this episode is how on earth does Shirigane's explanation of who she is tie up with the explanation that Masaru's grandfather gave him as to who Shirigane is.
The other thing that was kind of bugging me, and maybe this is like a super minor thing, but the kid's uncle was saying he was his dad's younger brother. So how fucking old was his dad?
I'll just say well on that front.
No, I mean, like, just by making him a weird old dude, I'm just like, well, then his dad must have been even older and maybe weirder based off his weird fucking diary of my evil plan. It's definitely dropped enough. You kept saying dropping threads, and I was like, that's the fucking pun in this show. it's definitely got its...
Yes, we now know that Masaru isn't just being hunted by puppets. His family is intricately connected to the history of puppets in Japan.
And I know just from looking up this brief cursory like image search sort of thing, I can see that Masaru like later on is going to be controlling a puppet of his own at some point. So,
oh fuck it, eh?
And she is. What's now? It's him direct next to a number. It's like 17, so he's like 17th in line or something.
Yes, he is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not actually sure any other siblings play a part, but
they're convenient to have around and just to have enough one. Here is like a creep in the family. We got a large supply of these creeps for the lads to bust in and start beating shit up.
Righty ho. Then we've got Gurazeni, episode 16. Celebrate the league pennant.
Moving all tension thing going from the episode itself. But
I guess that makes it sound like they win the league pennant. It's just them getting to it. But yeah.
This was a great second part of this story.
I think it's done pretty good, because it's hard to like nail that fucking that landing, but I think it did a reasonable job of it.
Payoff of Bonda's hubris of thinking how great he is and how great a job he's done with the softy, and then for his own nerves to absolutely make him balls it up right at the last minute and have to be saved by the softy.
And even to change it in this episode where Bonda was, because he didn't give him like a bollocking. It was just kind of like, listen, dude, you got to get your shit together. I'm like, it's not really working. You know, it was kind of like, I just need to give you some real talk right now. But your man is like, that absolute fucking bollocking you gave me, where you just made me look like a complete prick. I need you to do that again and fucking, where he was like, oh my god, that's the most soul destroying thing anyone's ever told me to my face, kind of thing.
And then Bonda's for a minute, and I've created a monster. He's one like this one disregarding his family, his child's about to be born. No longer playing for fun. I've killed his passion for the game. He's just a fucking baseball playing robot now. Oh no.
Yeah, because it turns out, he's been staying in a hotel room rather than going home. And he's like, oh, I should go home. I should at least go home for one day. It'd be fine if I go home for one day. But no, if I go for one day, I'll...
And he's imagining the grim specter of Bonda, like, giving out to him. And he's like, no, I can't do it.
Gotta stay in the zone.
This knot in my stomach is keeping me hungry, keeping me sharp for the fucking game, that kind of thing,
And then he runs into Bonda. But I said, no, it's fine. You should just go home for a day. You'll be fine.
See your family, God.
It's not this which has made you good. It's because you've hit them straight down the line.
You changed your swing,
Than swinging for the...
down the fucking swinging that's for the bleachers, is it?
Whatever the phrase is.
I'm not good at baseball terminology.
Score down.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he goes home, and then he is absolutely terrible again. But then,
yeah, like all the tension's released, and it's kind of that you kind of needed it.
There's a phone call from his dad saying, "Oh, no, he's been had to do a C-section, and
doctor said it'd be fine. Yeah. He wasn't breathing when he came out, but the doctor said this is perfectly normal and." It's fine. Everything's fine. And
he's like, breathing.
I gotta get out of this thing. And the dad just like being the it's like, oh, my sonny boy. Like this entire fucking time, just like, listen, you little motherfucker. You're staying there and you're playing baseball like a goddamn man. Everything's gonna be fucking fine. The doctor's got this shit. Okay. You fucking play baseball. That's what you get paid
for. Your
do.
Family, motherfucker.
But just the right bollocking he gets off the guy who's been nothing but super nice this entire fucking three-episode finish. Like it's
the,
great. It's a really good turn.
The underlying message is the doctor's good at his job. Let him do his job. And you do your job.
There's nothing you can do here except worry. So just fucking do your job right. Because you've actually been doing very good. And we're all very proud of you for doing good.
But it turns out at the end, the punchline is that he didn't stop worrying, but because he didn't stop worrying, he, unlike everybody else in the game, he was worrying about the game.
He was tense about the game.
He could relax about the actual playing of baseball and do the job. Because they make the point that everybody was playing badly before Bonda plays badly.
There was like fucking zero on the board before Bonda fucked up and when he just needed to hold it. Because all they needed to do was a draw on this, and basically they wouldn't be facing these guys again on their home turf. And if they get a draw on this one, they're still ahead in the scores, so they'll get to the pennant. Just
Bonda's
being
concerned about having to take it to their home turf, who is being yelled at, I guess.
Yeah, they're a very tough home crowd for him.
Yeah. also know the girl he likes is going to be in there, but also
Yellow
loves sticking his head on. He's like, oh no, I can't go out there.
That he thought that was going to be the thing that ruined his streak, but it was the overconfidence and I guess the tension as well, because he is complaining, is like, shit, it's all riding on me right now.
Yeah, so while the tension was helping Itsuki, it was destroying Bonda, as it normally does.
But that's the thing, like you said, that's the thing that always fucking has gotten him up to this point. I was like, oh god, that guy makes more money than me, he must be a better player.
Yes, because he's like narrating about himself. No, Bonda's up, he's like, the guy who earns 18 a year, and then at that point he starts sweating and he realizes, oh shit, it's all down to me and I'm no good, I only earn that amount of money.
And even after everyone going, it's like, oh yeah, the manager knows how fucking important you are, people telling him, is like, yeah dude, it's been on fucking
feel like
you
that
for
made it worse.
that did make him worse, but it's just like, dude, just fucking, you're doing great, you're a damn good player, just do your thing. But it's like, oh, it's all on me, I'll fuck it up.
Yeah, and even when they
and obviously he gives him a
run. When they win, he can't be happy because he's like, oh, I didn't really do anything. I almost fucked it completely up.
Yeah, I basically, like, it would have been a win if not for him, because as it was just a draw. But a draw that gets them to the pennant in the end. But he's kind of like, I'm celebrating, I'm throwing the manager in the air, I'm posing for the photo. I was like, I'm very uncomfortable with
dead
this.
Dead inside.
Because he knew he was going to be like the scapegoat if they had lost the game. If they'd lost the game.
Yeah.
And him saying to the other guys, like, thank you for not making it so I didn't lose the fucking game for the team.
Yeah. He's saying it as well, like, going on above and saying, oh, but how much I've contributed to the success of the team so far. When we get to the top of the lead, they're bound to give me a raise. But then he's like, oh, I probably pissed away all that goodwill with that one stupid move in the clutch game where everything counted.
I'm not sure he has, because the manager's been pretty cool with him. He's like, okay, he did get us that fucking far, you know? Because he obviously, the manager didn't get pissed at the at the softy, because he didn't take him off after his winning streak sort of fucking tanked. So he apparently is like, he gives people second chances, and he's like, he does see the quality of them. Yeah.
I'm now looking at apparently there were Gurazeni action figures a while back.
What?
I remember seeing the Bonda one. Right.
Yeah, I think they're all Bonda in different uniforms and things.
Oh, like the home and away thing.
I think. Well, I think unless I was misinterpreting some
covers of some of the mega volumes, he might change teams at some point.
Yeah, some of these action figures may be spoilers.
Yeah, I'm seeing wearing a mops top. What the fuck?
The fucking mops.
Hate the mops. Shit. I appreciate the tobe on this action figure. It's pretty good.
I did like when they were the first person we saw celebrating was the catcher, who just suddenly burst into life.
What's his deal? Will we ever find out?
His laser concentration, you can finally like break it, because now we've done it. It was all worthwhile.
And then next week, Bonda gets drunk and says something he shouldn't do on a radio show.
Uh oh.
That feels like a total sports thing, and I kind of love it. Yeah.
It's just locker room banter.
Oh, dear. I think my other favorite joke in this was the constant like thing of your man trying to imagine his son, like, it's like, oh my god, he's having trouble breathing, and his face was always obscured by like a shine on a machine, and when you see his face, he just looks like a fucking baby version of him because he already has a baby face. I was just like, that's a good joke.
The hair on that baby as well, for being only a few days, a few hours old.
The hair, look at the nose.
Talking of babies, Bono Bono episode 30, don't be scared, Bono-chan.
Another cute one. No.
Yeah, it's Bono babies again. And this time we learn that as a child, Bono was scared of the sea at night.
But scared of darkness and things he can't see and closing craps. His eyes.
And scary faces.
Yeah, and his dad just, again, standard, I don't have a fucking clue what to do in this situation. And I feel like his tired face of staying up all night was like the contrast from Bono's face of staying up all night worrying.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good kind of thing. The extra age on him does not fucking help him out.
Because it's like by the time he's figured out how to get Bono to sleep, it's in such a way that he can't sleep himself.
Because he needs to support him on his belly. Yeah.
And then he's scared by a crab, but not scared and doesn't eat an insect as it walks past him. So apparently that's an improvement. Did he eat an insect in a previous episode?
He just jams shit in his mouth. He's a little baby, so yeah.
He do that. And then Chipmunk just wanders past.
He's on his lead, but no one's holding him.
He's made a break for it.
And then when he's playing with Bono, Bono's no longer scared of the crab when he's with Chipmunk. And then it's not a particularly funny episode right to the end when Bono's dad is asking Chipmunk if he knows where he's going. Are you okay to get home, Chipmunk? Do you know where you're going? Are you okay? And then like the third cut is Chipmunk on a log floating down the river.
Are you sure you're good? You're good,
you're
right?
Okay. Oh, they grow up so fast.
It's cute as all of these are, but generally not as cute and heartwarming, I would say, than funny, these Bono-chan ones.
Yeah. I feel like I would appreciate the jokes in these more if I was a parent myself, yes. In that kind of way.
I think that's more funny when you've got Chipmunk's dad in there as well as having the two terrible dads.
Yeah. Well, terrible for different reasons. Yeah.
Well, especially, I mean, in absentia. Chipmunk's dad is terrible.
I mean, like, him not being there just shows, yeah, how shitty he is, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, they're cute. It's not about a prevailing sense of existential ennui we're used to with regular Bono.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess his dad is, like, fucking losing fucking years off his life with all the worry he's doing when Bono was a kid. But we know he's okay later on, so that's... He does talk slower, though. Maybe he had, like, a stroke or something. Shit, I didn't think of that.
And we've got SSSS.Gridman, episode 4, Suspicion.
Suspicion.
Where Akane is like trying to figure out whether Yuta is Gridman, but then gets dragged into a group date with some YouTubers.
Like, initially I thought they were a pop thing, the way the other kids were talking. I was like, they're just fucking YouTubers, man.
They're trying to emulate one. Oh, question answers with your favorite boy band. No, fun. Like,
yeah, no.
Koji, what's your favorite kind of cake? I like sponge cake. Okay, well, go on, Koji.
The way they were all, they reacted the same way to the monsters, like, huh? What? Like, was it trying to show that they're all fucking stupid? I wasn't entirely sure, because they all had the kind of same unbelieving reaction to this thing.
Mm. What is this? Is this some kind of reaction video? What's this going on here? What?
Very much so.
Am I being punked? Is punked still a thing?
They also Rika also gets invited as well by her two friends. And meanwhile, Yuta and Sho are like, "Ah, oh, this is terrible." Sho because he's got a crush on Akane, and Yuta because he's got a secret crush on Rika. So they go to the blonde-haired one of the weapons suggests that they just follow them, and then all the weapons follow them as well, which is the best thing. And then just chastise them for stalking the entire time.
They're just hanging out at the diner part of the junk shop at this stage, which is great. And the mother's just brilliant, fucking regular customers. This is fantastic.
With the ones who are clearly adults pretending to be children.
And I did like your man, the fucking, I don't know any of the names. I'm going to call him Grimlock.
Max Tracker.
When Max was kind of like, when he was like, okay, you're interested in her, are you? And he's like, what? No. He's just like, you should talk to her. You know, he's trying to tell a kid to just like, just use your fucking words like a grown up might. Yeah. But he can't get through to a kid.
What does he say? It's not bad, but it is very vexing.
Yes, it bothers him. It's like, just say something, motherfucker. Yeah,
for the bit where the mom's talking to him, we go, oh, you're very tall. And then it says, Samurai Calibur, oh, well, I'm your tall. And then when Rika starts getting grumpy, she wants to say, your puberty's showing.
I like when Ellie was tracking them in a karaoke place when trying to find him over the air, and Samurai Calibur starts kicking in doors and in here, but saying, no, you can't do that, but we're trying to find them. No, I'm not. I'm going to get us arrested.
Yeah, because it's not like because they're weapons, they're all socially dysfunctional. It's just Samurai Calibur, the one who has the least human name.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense that he has the least human everything about him.
But yeah, he does follow Rika to keep her safe when she goes looking for the sole surviving YouTuber after Akane gets pissed off at them during the party.
What was it pissed off? Was it him kind of ingratiating himself by kind of bumping into her?
Yes. Personal space, dude. Personal
or was
space.
It the fact that she took the piss out of his... he took the piss out of her fucking icon.
They weren't giving up.
Because he was taking the piss out of the monster's voice. I forgot the...
They deserve.
Yes. I feel like that would piss
I'm
me off
sorry.
More.
I gotta go home now to murder all of you. I'll see you later.
Then she tries to get Auntie to do it, but Auntie's like, no, I'm only fighting Gridman.
Fuck off, then. And find out probably how she cracked her phone screen by keeping throwing it in people's faces.
So she's got to step it up a notch, so she makes a special monster to kill YouTubers. And she manages to kill three of them, Rika saves the fourth after she realises that
it's working its way down a list. She does ring up the one who's doing the killing, thinking that, oh shit, I better make sure everyone's here. And I did like the way the group chat that they'd made, like there was only five people in the chat, so they went on a group date with like one guy, and everyone was like, yeah, it'd be weird if we went with four guys. What are you talking about? I was like,
not only does it erase like the very existence of this person, it also erases any like
logical any, arguments.
any kind of lingering questions as to why the situation may have been.
But yeah, there's a lot of shots of Akane's bare feet and Rika's thighs in this episode, though.
Lots of feet.
When she was reaching up on the high shelf, I was like, kind of fine, because he's like, it was from your man's point of view, and it's kind of like, I think I like her kind of thing. And it was nearly contextualized as like that it was him looking at her, but other than that, it's like, that's her alone in a room with an evil computer. Like, why are we looking at her toes? Because someone's into that is why we're looking at her toes.
Yep. No, it's to emphasize her frustration for not being able to kill that grid man. She's just like tapping her feet and her.
Why do you have to animate her pulling off her socks? Is that a necessary thing to show her frustration?
Well, she said she was getting more comfortable, so she can finally kill that grid man.
So grid man tries to fight the monster, but then another monster shows up, i.e. Ante, who can apparently detect Ante. When Gridman appears now.
Well, he could just probably see him, like, downtown.
No, there's like a sound effect you know? Thing, or like a special effect thing of, like...
He's also doing, like, the ping thing when he's running out of battery, so, probably something.
That's, like, more signposting that he'll turn face,
That he'll do a heel turn.
So then all the weapons try and come through the computer to help him, but that causes...
Let's all get summoned.
The computer to crash.
Open all the applications at once. That one's slowed down.
Yeah, I think you got it. The computer is too fucking old to run all these fucking applications.
Run Photoshop and virus scan. You've got your internet browser open. You got a Skype for chat going on as well. It's like, too much. And play the video. Stop it. Nope.
And you ran with the screen frozen open on junk, and he's like, "Oh man, what do we do?" And everyone's just like, "I'll just plug it out, plug it in, on and off again." That's usually how we do this thing. And he's freaking the fuck out. They all fly out of the computer, and there's like, "Oh, I guess we can't all get someone." Which is the strongest?
It's like a brief uncomfortable silence, but then we don't see the discussion. We just see that Max comes through.
The guy who's as wide as he is tall. Maybe that guy.
The guy who gives you giant arms to give you a powered up kick. I love that as well. It was just like, that is fucking so unnecessary.
But it's brilliant. When they said all four was going to go through, Vit is like, even me, it's like he doesn't want to fight.
Like what? Fucking, all right, I guess.
And so they take care of the monster, and Ante's about to attack him, and he runs out of power as well. Much to his frustration.
Yeah, because he's stayed on while Gridman has been turned off and on again. And then, so he's run out of more battery.
He's plucking up the courage to invite Rika out to eat, and he manages to do it, but she misinterprets it as suggesting that everybody here should go and have a meal together. Where are they going to find a place which can serve seven at this time of day?
We'd have to book ahead, huh?
At which point it's like, so very vexing.
I also love the way your man, his friend was like all about like, oh my god, we got to stake it out. We got to find him and fucking protect their purity and all this kind of thing. Even his friend was like, I thought you said she was like fucking too good for you. And he's like, no, I said she was too good for anyone.
She's unapproachable. When she
goes home, he's like, yeah, come on, this is dumb, let's go home. But at that stage, he's like, but I want to find the girl I fancy. It's like, no, everyone come home. Come on, weapons, we're all going home.
I got what I needed. Phew! The weight off my mind.
Total dick move, yeah.
And again, it's kind of creepy that they do say they're 21-year-old YouTubers, and I assume they're supposed, Rika and that lot are supposed to be 15, 16.
Yeah, because they're talking about it's like, oh shit, is she into like older guys, yes. Like going for the college guys, that kind of weirdness, and they're like, ooh. That kind is a creep.
But do they deserve to be killed by kaiju? That's the question.
Not for being weirdos. That's creepy as fuck, but it's not murderable. It's not a murderable offense to mock someone's avatar and and get killed for it, no.
I know, like we'd have YouTubers have got a bad rep, but we're not saying we'd be run up against stomped by a giant dinosaur. That's going too far. They won't learn nothing that way. Mm.
Then we've got Gegege no Kitaro, episode 30, The Vampire's 30. Halloween Party. Which we have another creep, this time a vampire, the well-established creeps of history.
Yeah, pretty much.
I do like the one line she has of like being like the Western creep, which she's talking, Japanese girls are just like dolls.
Yeah, I mean, like, it makes sense that a vampire would be that kind of like racist and also creepo like weirdo. Fetishes. Yeah.
Is it, what's her name? Is it Carmilla or Carmilla? Carmilla. Carmilla.
Carmilla is the vampire, yeah.
Mm. She sets up a extra-dimensional cinema to lure Japanese girls there on Halloween and to turn them into vampires.
Like, initially, I thought your man, I forgot his name, Ratman, was gonna... Nozomi Otogo. I thought he was handing out, like, 3D glasses, but so, it's not, there's not even anything on the screen. It's a VR. fucking thing. So why did you even need to go out to the cinema?
Well, you need to find, like, you know, an active seating space for everyone.
Sure, sure.
So, and they did a screen free in here, so why not?
Yeah. And it's a communal experience. Scared together.
It's a good fucking setup for the shit later, I will admit.
Also, catching Kara is an instance of that person you've hated the most that says something like, that's made a really good point. Because Catching Kara is Halloween, because like, this commercial isn't fun. No one gets a shit about fucking yokai and stuff. But all of a sudden, it's all vampires and werewolves and shit. Where's our fucking holiday? And
it's just a fucking cosplay holiday, yeah, man.
And for Nism Yotoko as the exact same opinion, it's just like, how do I pass this?
The only thing that differs in their exactly the same fucking said thing is Nism Yotoko was a...
I'm talking while I stop it so it doesn't come up on the podcast.
Oh, sure. I didn't hear it, but the only difference in their speech is she's talking about how you get the creeps trying to copy feel or that kind of thing. Whereas he's like, and you see all the lovey couples going around. That's the only difference in their experience. Other than that, they hate Halloween exactly the same.
Like, get this shit all year. It's fucking, get that fucking Valentine's Day, get that white day, get that Christmas. It's like, oh, I hate
and
it.
He's not even been part of this evil scheme. He is just literally just working a part-time job on Halloween.
On a holiday, I don't think I've ever seen anyone mad about Halloween, but it makes sense. Ghosts and monsters,
On A Bit of Fried Laurie, there was a sketch where talking about the right and wrong ways to answer a door to trick-and-treaters, and that hinges on British people being mad at Halloween being an American tradition. What's
because they have to interact with people?
UK, yes.
Right.
Even though our local paper has clearly shown that, like, people in the UK have been doing Halloween celebrations at least since the 50s.
I mean, like, it's probably older as a holiday at this side of the water, right?
Yes, they could find, you know, we have like, the trick-or-treating thing, which is an American adaptation, but you'll think you'll find that the actual spirit of the season goes back much, much further and much, much closer to the UK than you would think.
Mm.
Something I'm watching and planning about. Stay inside watching Christopher Lee.
Even Agnes is surprised that they celebrate Halloween in Japan.
So why are those kids doing on a playground and then like just going up to strangers?
She was dressed like a witch. I think that's why they did it. That wasn't them just chancing their fucking arm at someone sitting on a bench. It's like, you're specifically dressed like a witch on Halloween. You obviously have candy. I'll give you the candy.
What would I do out there? I don't know. But you're not going to find many people with sweets out there. Besides Agnes,
I think they were just in their costumes pre trick or treating, and they were just like in the playground in their costumes because they get to dress up. Yeah, it's totally reasonable.
Yes. And they struck gold in the first try and said, "Lads, we're going home. Nobody to go door to door for us."
No, they're fucking good.
Yeah,
they're good for the night, if not for the fucking weekend.
Looked around to make sure no one else could see, or particularly Kitaro couldn't see, and then.
I initially thought she was looking around as like, are you fucking talking to me? But yeah, I was specifically like, okay, here's all the candy, abracadabra. or at least a good chunk.
I like
of
the
it,
fact
yeah.
that, so when Mana and Nekomasume are in the cinema, it's not that they figure out something's going on wrong, but when a vampire puts her hand on Nekomasume's shoulder, she thinks it's just a creep trying to cop a feel.
And then she's like, oh shit, it's vampires actually. Fuck, that's actually a problem. That was a good joke, yeah.
The Ur creep.
and there's a lot of running around the Mystic Cinema while Kitaro and Agnes try to get into the cinema because they discover that it's been teleported from a lot into another dimension. And Agnes's sister has put a barrier up, so Agnes can't use her magic to get through, but hey, if she combines her powers with Kitaro, and if Kitaro stops complaining for 1 second, they'll be able to get through this.
I feel like a lot of this episode is just them trying to resolve their shit so they can work together to solve the problem. Yeah.
I did like the bit when she gets blasted back and her broomstick catches her. It's like, moves.
Yeah, it's nice to give that thing a little more personality, since we've established it's sentient. Yes.
And then they break in, and meanwhile, Nekomasume has told Mana to hide in this room while she goes and finds the vampire, discovers she's living in a mirror dimension inside this other dimension.
This is some Castlevania shit, man. It's great.
Yeah. Very clever, Dracula.
Carmilla tricks Carmilla into thinking that she's losing, but actually she's just manoeuvring her into a position where Kizaru can shoot her with his fingers.
Straight to the heart, I believe. So they know how vampires work, at least.
Or at least Kitaro's been fucking informed this time, yeah.
But a bit of her gets away as a tiny bat. To fight again another day. And then next week it appears to take a break from this story. To deal with...
Oh yeah, that's right.
As a Halloween episode, it was good. It was nothing super dazzling, but I thought the story hangs together well.
No.
Oh, and they did forget one little thing, or at least I feel like we forgot something.
One lost between realms for all time, or until next week at least.
Wasn't his reaction something like, man, fuck Halloween, like that, or something like that?
There was also a like, tiny bit where they're discussing the ring showing up, but I felt like that was supposed to... It's like they can't detect it till right before it happens, which feels like, oh, that's like a probably like talking of like earthquake detection. I guess that's
okay. Yeah. You don't get much fucking preemption on that.
Righty ho, and then finally, double decker. No, not finally. We've got Schoolface Bookseller Honda San to do first. Get over there, school Facebook seller Honda-san.
Working overtime.
Where he's been sent on a course to learn how...
In training.
To be a better meet and greeter.
So these are bad across planet Earth, then, I take it. There's no good version
of
these.
There's one person who wants to be here and is actually already good at it, so probably didn't need to be here at all.
Yeah, you just have to do the course as part of the...
Yeah, but it beats...
Were they all bookshop
sellers,
or was it just random... Yes. Okay, I wasn't clear on that.
But you can turn up in... You don't have to turn up in your uniform. There's that guy in his volleyball kit.
Yeah, but everyone takes the piss out of your one for wearing a fucking... wearing a tracksuit, yeah.
So they have to do these various... They got like four steps of greeting the company has. Because, they say it's like, this is our company's... role play.
You're right. I thought it was like some of them might have been the same subsidiary companies, but it's probably all workshops.
We're here to practice and get this better, and we're here with assistant manager Buddha Mask.
Assistant fucking manager Many Faces.
So sure,
yeah.
How to do it.
I could not think of that when he fucking did that flip, because I thought it was like, what's the deal with that fucking hat he's wearing? I was like, oh, okay.
When the trainer has like got the most stereotypical like sort of fake
a positive fucking public speaking thing. That's a good way to put it. I hate that. Ugh.
Yeah,
what's the thing? Fanto from Super Mario Brothers 2.
yeah, it's got that kind of look in it, and the expression only smiles harder, like more menacingly. That's the only way to change it.
As he's going in, Honda runs into a woman he finds attractive and is distracted by her briefly.
Initially, they give each other a nod. A nice, friendly woman comes up to him who's also going to training. Is like, oh, I'm getting a good feeling about this. That's two positive things that have happened to me today. And then it's like, no.
Yeah, she's the one who clearly doesn't need to be here because she's already got it down perfectly.
She's fine. She's just so fucking blasé. It's just like, she's just naturally fucking happy no matter what the fuck you put her in.
Pair off, and he's paired with this guy who refuses to do any of the thing except for the thing where you're supposed to criticize the person, constructive criticism of the person you're doing it with. He does do that to Honda-san. And Honda-san's thinking, like, this guy isn't doing anything he's being told. But Honda-san, of course, can't criticize him because he's... And the gag...
He's a nice skeleton.
Where she's like saying, it's the muscles, right next to Honda-san, who has no muscles on his face.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Smile harder. It's like, I'm a fucking skeleton. I can't smile more than this.
Technically, I'm also smiling. So, I don't know why I need to be here.
And then when the pretty woman is doing it with Buddha Mask, and Honda-san can't tell whether she's doing it earnestly or sarcastically, and then it becomes clear by the end that she's doing it sarcastically.
Yeah, by the end, it's just like, I am grinning and bearing it, literally. But he can't help but notice, even with the yes, I'm very happy kind of like grimace, that it's like, oh, her teeth are also lovely.
But it's the sound effects as well. Yeah.
You can nearly hear the fucking grinding. Yeah, yeah.
But then when they're leaving, she gives him a genuine smile, and then he's happy, and then also as a viewer...
As someone who survived the same fucking
thing,
And as a viewer,
we now know that, yes, she was just taking the piss. She was, like, doing it stupidly earnestly.
To appease the fake earnestness
of the... Yeah, so it's like,
you're doing it
with such gusto that they can't tell you off for not doing it properly. Because it looks like you're trying, even though it becomes...
That's probably the best lesson to take, yeah. The real life fucking lesson.
And then who's the other one to get sent?
Manager Kitson MS has to go and do it then. And he's like, oh, this fucking shit. Well, I better make sure I leave an hour or get the runtime, but fuck this shit.
Where even is this fucking place? I've never been fucking that part of fucking town. Fuck. But actually, she's pretty good.
Effing and lining about the whole thing, but still, like, I'm picking the effort to do take. Go there on time and do it. Make some kind of effort to do it properly.
Then she
does
offend Honda-san by going and ask full face mask where this place is, even though Honda-san was there the day before.
Way to disrespect him, but I guess he's kind of a pushover, maybe that's why she's not asking. She doesn't want. Maybe she's being nice because it does say, she's actually all right. She doesn't want to push
maybe...
him.
Maybe
into telling
his directions
where it is.
Are really bad and they are erotic.
They're too neurotic for her liking, maybe.
Now, Double Decker, Doug and Kirill. Episode 6, Up Close and Personal, 24 Hours with the Lys Valletta Police. Didn't turn out to be the entire episode, just part of it. Which they go full bore by censoring everybody's faces and voices.
Yeah, and have to go about 3 camera angles to work with.
Well, at one stage, like when they do one shot, you can see the camera angle of the guy who's literally there with the camera in the scene for one of the close-ups through the window, through the back window, I think he's...
So they're supposed to be doing the stakeout, but they're called out to deal with this guy who claims he's a crime boss. And then his story, I can't tell whether this is foreshadowing or an elaborate Big O-related joke.
I don't know, man.
And there are 2 sons in the sky, which I thought it was before.
Was there 2 sons? And I was like, oh, that must be just like
that
an affectation of like the way they're shining on the lens.
The first episode, I think, is called The City of 2 Sons or something. I think we brought it up, that we never see the 2 sons.
But it was in the prior episode, there was actually like a shot of the 2 sons in the sky. And I thought it was just like a shine or something.
See, in this episode, I know they have this recurrent... fucking time-lapse type of shot about size the 7-0 office, and you can see 2 sons on that, all right?
But the thing of him saying is like, I'm from up there, man, the reality
I'm
above
from the
our thing.
Floor. It's really high up. and there's some other things which like allude to what was going on in Big O. I was like, okay, is this just a joke, or is this really happening here as well? Is that sort of, they're going to like do a massive reveal at the end?
Is it setting up
where
stuff?
Big O, Tiger and Buddy and this are all different tests?
Different false versions or virtual versions of reality,
The extra dimension of the producer is trying out all these different anime series pictures and seeing what merchandise we can get out of them.
It would explain why each one is so very stylish in its own way.
If another character
shows
up who looks like our Dorothy in this, then...
Okay. dear. I did notice the purple-haired person walking in the background in the footage, and I was like, okay, that seems like they're trying to set something up there. And I did like the way that turned up to be something, but the other person, obviously, I couldn't have possibly figured out.
Yeah, I feel like they show you that you see that same camera angle, like, you know, so many times over the, the 5 or whatever minutes that you're doing the whole thing, and the phone saying, oh, yeah, just there's someone walking back there. And I wonder, is that going to... You probably don't figure that it's going to like amount to anything, but you just remember seeing it, and then you feel kind of sparkling. It's like, oh, so
Exactly.
As well.
It's a good use of the using that same shot so you can see what's different, where's Wally fucking style, but also the it's cheap as fuck, and you get to do the whole cops thing. So it's so great.
Everyone seems very vaguely nonplussed about it, but then we reveal that Kirill got his landlady to record it because he's actually a super fan of this show and he's really happy to be in it. He's like, oh, I should have said more. I could have said this and that at this point. And then he notices, hang on, is that my sister in the background? And then...
just coincidentally
he approaches Doug about it, but in the usual way. Doug has also spotted something, but it's not the same thing, but Kirill thinks it's the same thing, and the narrator goes, yes, by now you have guessed it. I'm sure you understand that this is a misunderstanding.
But we're going to let you... Kirill has not figured out what's going on, because as we know, he is a fucking moron.
So let's watch him dangle for a few minutes more.
I appreciated the show going like, yeah, you figured out how this fucking format works. Just fucking enjoy. It's going to be funny.
So it turns out it's actually the guy they were after, who Doug had spotted. But meanwhile, there's like hilarious dialogue as Kirill's like putting all this heartfelt things.
What do you think I should say? It's been so long. I really don't know what to say. It's like, just say what you usually say. You know, it's like you're under arrest is what he's implying. But it's like, yeah, I think that'd be more natural.
The thing is now, we don't.
It's just
we don't
weird.
Know whether Doug knows that Kirill's wrong and he's leading him on at this point.
See, that's the thing. It's impossible to tell with him because he's constantly fucking with his partner.
As we know, Doug is an asshole.
It's still fun to watch, yeah. Is it confusion, or is he like playing up that so later on he can say, oh, I thought you were talking about that?
After the arrest, it clears up, and then they get Apple Bieber to help them.
They explained that the city of London, I mean, the city of fucking Two Suns, is the most heavy cameras everywhere. So he's got this algorithm that he can use to track people. And they're like, that's creepy, dude. It's like, no, it's not. It's for justice. Yeah, it's not creepy.
Yeah, because wasn't there like a pseudo Big Ben shot as well in this episode?
I think so. Yeah,
and
yeah.
The pot noodles they're in on the steak app. So then they track down. They like get some more footage. You know, it's like definitely looks like they were trying to deliberately evade the cameras though. So lost her once she went in this toilet. Because even I can't get the cameras into the toilets. Not that I would want to put cameras in the toilets.
Not yet.
There's something about this motherfucker, and I do enjoy his like just squirming under the fucking
particularly
spotlight.
Particularly at the end.
Anytime he says something.
They're more concerned about the fact that he's trying to film in toilets.
He followed them to the toilet. I wasn't trying to go in. I wasn't trying to get a camera in the toilet. I swear. That's totally... Come on, guys. Also, they're initially like, oh, Doc, oh, sorry, we didn't invite you. He's like, oh, that's not important. But I mean, like, that does hurt my feelings, though. And then we're like, he's kind of crazy.
So they're like, oh, well, at least you know she's alive. And then it's like, you think, okay, the way this narrative plays out, this will be an ongoing subplot. Yeah, eventually they'll show up.
Yeah.
And then they show up in the very next scene where they've been hired as the bartender.
No, in the exact same scene that they're talking about it. Because they're talking about it in your man's fucking bar. Scene. And then it's like, hey, guys, I got a new fucking employee. Check it out. It's, oh, is this your sister? Weird. Small
like
fucking
you.
World. Wow. And it's just like the entire fucking effort that they put is just completely useless. And it's just funny as fuck.
And the fact that, like, Kirill's like, doesn't know what to say. And then Peach is like, okay, I'll just come out and say it. Why'd you leave?
Yeah, everyone's asking all the questions. It kind of cuts back to Doug. Is like, well, the real question you want to ask her is why she left you. Yeah. And Kirill's like, yeah, you know what? I'll let you answer that when you feel like you can, when you feel comfortable enough. And for now, I'm just happy that you're back in my life and that kind of thing. It's like, oh, this is nice. It's a nice, sweet moment. But the doc's reveal of which toilets she went into is, I'm confused. Because that makes it very much so more
confusing. This is the bit people have got trouble with. I think that's partly because they invested so much in the show that they were, like, hoping for.
Sure.
Like, they don't want the trans character's reveal happening in a toilet. That is, of course, if they are a trans character, if they're even the sister,
See, that's the thing. Like, it's like, I'm actually not your sister. I'm completely a different character. And I was like, wait, so was his sister like an undercover cop who was a guy this entire time? I'm not fucking sure.
I'm
it's weird.
I'm explanation as quickly as possible because this is the way this show goes. It's not going to make you hang on.
I don't expect that to be like, hung on, based off how they fucking treated this thing. But it's not so much the reveal that his sister was a guy. It's that his sister was not even his brother.
Well, no, they're still the same surname. Cause
I'm confused.
They say, I'm not Miller Vrabel, I'm Valerie Vrabel. Yeah.
Oh, I thought they had a different surname as well. I must have picked that up wrong. No. Sorry.
But look, the exact same. It's the same face. It's got to be related in some way. So. That's obviously not in dispute here.
And I thought they were playing it up because is it the same voice actor who does Carol? Or
I can't see any voice actor listed yet on the wiki or the website.
Mm-hmm. I love your fucking theory of the robot being his robot girlfriend that became someone else's robot girlfriend. If that's not it, I imagine it's going to be something. Maybe something even dumber and sillier than that, but yeah.
And if we've got to mention that they're not told that they're going to be on the TV show that Travis has set them on.
Yeah, the boss is apprehensive about it, but they're not sure why,
They get these calls sometimes. It's the house help. He can't say no to them. He's got to give in to their demands. They go, fun. What's she got up now? What's she sending them into? And we know it's going to be for fucking the shitty TV program. But
the commentator on the TV program talking about it was like, oh yes, the senior detective is on the case and he's tricking the drunk guy into doing all this stuff. And I was like, it's a very boring like thing. They're just taking back these misses. She gives him a bottle again. They apologize. It's a really boring cop show.
It is very boring. The program on this like on at work. It's dealing with the cops or the guards who are on like the metro system in Stockholm, I think.
Okay.
So it's like, we got the controls on the phone, and we got an incident on the platform. We go, we got to send the guys down there, the phone body cams is all, the shaky cam chased down the escalator, and then, it's just some guy who passed out drunk, or is drunk as kind of, being a city, and the phone. It's always the exact same thing. It's always a drunk or somebody fucking being belligerent, probably while drunk, or they've just passed out or clapped somewhere because they're feeling unwell. It's almost the same exact thing. And they do the same thing, it's blurred out. And the voice is distorted. They sound like fucking demons, though, because they do like...
Oh, they're going the low way. Because this one, they went all high, and I think that made it funnier. I think that was the right way to go, Yeah,
but it is a very fucking very banal, repetitive, boring subject matter. It does the same way, but they able to create the necessary amount of drama around us, and that's what people watching. And saying, that could be, like, happen to me in my metro ride, like, tomorrow night. So, these guys are here to guard me.
Seeing our exciting Cops Against Super Drugs TV show have to do regular boring cop TV show that we have in our reality, but also with hints of like the Big O or some other fucking like reality on top of a reality type situation. But maybe it's just some fucking drunk guy who watched too much anime. I don't fucking know. It was a really good bit.
Righty-ho, that is the show for this week. We'll be back here next week for Find Polpo's Treasure, and in the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.com and dynamitingthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Oi.
Farewell.